ladies and gentlemen, I have late breaking news. He is about to be editor-in-chief of the Journal of Risk Analysis. So you heard it here. Dr. Greenberg received his PhD from Columbia University. Please join me in welcoming him.
Thanks, Jim. I'm a pacer. I love to talk and walk around at the same time. And one of the fun parts that goes that sometimes back in the old days when we didn't have such sophisticated equipment, I would trip over something. So the very first time I ever appeared on television, I literally almost fell off the stage on CBS Morning News. Right after that, they would have a show where some eminent individual would get on and give a talk about something. Well, I got on to give a talk on 6 a.m., and I literally fell off the stage. This equipment is much better for someone like me. When I saw the list of speakers, I was a little concerned. I thought there might be some culture shock here because I'm really the first of a group of social scientists that's going to make presentations here. But now I've been listening real carefully the last couple days. And just going back to Bob's talk, and that has as much social science in it, maybe more social science than it did have technical and engineering sciences. You could read Bob's values, you could read Bob's ethics, and I've heard a lot of that from almost all the speakers here today. And maybe it is the fact of us being a little bit older, having been around the track a bunch of times, getting a sense for the fact that it's not necessarily going to be all the technical material that's going to explain the kinds of things that we have to do to be successful in nuclear waste management. I also want to say I'm honored to be here to honor Frank. One of the things I learned within the last year and a half when we started working on the nuclear materials and energy handbook is that if you want to find an expert on something, Frank knows them. So David and a few other people will say, oh, just call Frank. He'll know who it is. And sure enough, it was true. And I'm also so pleased to be here because I have interviewed John Garrick on the phone. I've interviewed Bob Budnitz on the phone, but I had never met them until I'm here. So I'm really glad to meet you, even though I've, of course, read many things that you've written. So as a social scientist, my work deals with the issue of LULUs, or locally unwanted land use. It deals with the expression you've heard of NIMTU, not in my term of office. It deals with the issue of TODs, or temporary obsolete abandoned derelict sites, which are essentially places that will poison an entire economy, an entire area, stigmatize them, in other words. And it also deals with things like media coverage of issues. And between myself and Roger, I think we could probably respond to a series of questions about any of these subjects that you would like to raise. But I was asked, and I want to really focus on what a lot of people have been talking about the last day and a half, which is are nuclear power plants, nuclear waste facilities, engineering science facilities that have nuclear materials in them, are they really locally unwanted land uses? And, you know, what did the United States data tell us? And since I'm here and have heard, as the expression was yesterday, Frank was good sticking in the pin, and I've had the pin stuck with me a few times by Frank, so I said, well, how would Frank characterize the talk that I'm about to give or the quality of the data that I'm about to give? And one way of characterizing and summarizing what I'm about to say is that the data are entirely inadequate, and that's what I actually feel, and that's a nice way of saying it. So I said to myself, now how would Frank characterize it? I think Frank would characterize it as embarrassing. So I think that's really the bottom line about what I'm going to tell you. We think that we know what the quality of the data are, and we think we know what public perception is. But based on a fair amount of work that we've done looking at the data that's out there, we really don't know, with a few exceptions and a few time periods. So let's go to the first slides. There are tens of thousands of people have been asked questions about their perception of nuclear power, nuclear war, and nuclear waste. And a lot of questions, but we don't have very good answers. And here's the reasons we don't have very good answers. There is a science to public opinion polling. But for some reason, the people that ask questions about nuclear power, nuclear waste, nuclear war, don't seem to follow it very well, frankly. Irregular scheduling. Now you say, well, what difference is if I ask the questions in mid-January or mid-February? Probably not much difference. But if I ask the questions in mid-January versus mid-August, it might make a big difference because certain people are not reachable during mid-August that are reachable in mid-February and mid-January. So one of the things that you look for when you go through a survey is if the questions are going to be asked every year, are they in fact asked in a relatively similar time frame, at least during the same season? The answer is pretty much no. They're all over the lot. And in fact, looking at a lot of the surveys, they don't even ask them every year. Sometimes they ask them 1 year, and then 3 years later, they come back and ask the questions again. Well, it's a problem. Another issue is external validity. External validity is what happens if I ask the questions and then someone tries to duplicate my questions who's asking them in another location, another country, using a different language. It's a problem of translation. I'll give you a very specific example. I thought I knew a lot about questions that would solicit people's understanding and ability to give us their perception of neighborhood quality. Pretty obvious, right? And some of the questions I've used are based on scales that I've developed around individuals' efficacy, because I think, that that influences people's ability to judge a neighborhood as excellent, fair, poor, and so on. Well, we tried to use my survey instrument in Accra, Ghana, and the people could not follow the scale. The questions were just not register for that culture. There it was more than just a language translation, it was a cultural translation. So external validity is a problem in surveys, has been for years, and in fact there's just an editorial in the latest issue of American Journal of Public Health on external validity as a problem. And looking at some of the surveys that have been done on nuclear-related is a problem. Internal validity. Internal validity is if it's my questionnaire, and I asked the questions this year and the same date and control for time and all these other things, and I ask it a year from now, internal validity problems occur when you don't exactly ask the same question. And so, for example, there was this series of studies done on how did Americans change their behavior after 9/11. And then the same survey was to be done a year later. Well, it was done almost exactly a year later, a month later, after a year. So it was 13 months after 12. That was okay. The problem is they changed some of the key questions. For example, instead of asking the individuals what they did about their behavior, they asked almost exactly the question, same question, but said, what did you do? What is your perception of how people, not just you, but people change their behavior? That's a big, big difference. And it was recorded in the results. Now, you can, if you have to change a question, you could change it, but the first time you change it, roughly half of the sample should use the old question and half the new question so you can get a comparability. They didn't do it. And in a lot of the nuclear surveys, the same problem occurs. In external validity, internal validity, I read some of these surveys, basically, they just are not telling us what we want to know, over time especially. And then, probably the most annoying thing about a lot of the surveys, especially the national ones, there's a lack of predictive variables. I want to know not only what the public perception is, but I want to be able to explain it. This goes back to a basic problem of public opinion polling. You need to have a good hypothesis, a good question in mind, before you go out and spend $50,000 or $60,000 on a public opinion poll. People over the last couple days have mentioned the issue of trust, and I'll mention that a little bit here. But if you really think that variations in people's perceptions of nuclear power plants or nuclear waste management is related to trust, you have to have the questions in there. Virtually none of these surveys have any questions about that. And so we're left looking at the data and say, well, is this change of 5% or 6% related to trust, or is it not? You have no way of telling. If you don't ask the question, you can't get the answer. And it's tiring to see every single survey ask about race and ethnicity and education and income and gender. and things that the census measures, those are useful to have because in many cases they're confounders and controllers, but they don't really tell us what we need to know for this kind of work, which is it related to trust? Is it related to people's personality? Is it related to their view of the world? That is, the extent to which they're optimists or pessimists. To know the answers to those questions, you have to ask them. And very few of these polls ask them. And so I read these things and I just get very, very frustrated because you can't do much with them. Okay, on to the next one. So out of the hundreds of surveys that I've looked at, I've looked at a lot of European ones, here are some that survive some of the tests. Gallup has done 3 surveys, the latest in 2007. Eugenio Rosa has done 4 surveys, the latest in 2004. And MIT has done several, the latest in 2007. Then there is this number 4. This is done for the Nuclear Energy Institute. Continuous data from 1983 to 2005. That should be the best, and I'll say a little bit about that later. So what do these 4 surveys tell us at the national scale? Well, irrespective of which one you look at, you do see increasing support for nuclear power, increasing public support for renewing plant licenses, support for federal government in the form of technical and financial support. But between these surveys, there were big differences. And I have to say, the first 3 show much less increase, positive increase, if you're in favor of nuclear power, than the last one. The Visconti surveys basically show a much bigger increase in public support than the first 3. Now, I'm not saying one is right, other is wrong. I'm just saying that there is a big difference between number 4 and the first 3. And unfortunately, part of the problem with number 4, you can't get the data. Okay? Well, that's part of what will lead to my recommendations about this. So that's finding number 1. Now, findings number 2 and 4, and I just pulled a few specifically for this audience because what we're talking about, I will call some of the most interesting findings. I would not necessarily characterize them as findings that I necessarily believe. So number 2, which comes out of the MIT survey in 2007, asked a series of questions about how concerned are you about storing nuclear waste for a long period of time? And only 28% agreed that waste could be stored safely for a long period of time. So let's just remember that for a second and go on to the next. And number 3, which was part of that same survey, also talked about support for reprocessing of nuclear fuel. And that's a very interesting finding for this group. 60% supported DOE's reprocessing program, and they linked it to their support for expansion of nuclear power. That is, in the report that was published, they indicated, again, I don't have the data, so I can't tell you for sure, and I don't have the correlation coefficients because I don't have access to the data, but basically they made the argument, they drew the conclusion that the more people who were in favor of reprocessing linked it to their support for the expansion of nuclear power, and that in turn was also linked to their views about long-term storage. So this survey basically says that people don't trust long-term storage. It also says there's considerable support, maybe surprisingly high amount of support, for DOE's reprocessing program, and those would lead them to increase their support for expansion of nuclear power. But, here's the but. The but is that the questions about reprocessing were, prior to them being asked, was preceded by several statements, which essentially, I think, well, I'll just say what they were, and then you can decide whether it was fair or not, characterized the relative success of the French and Japanese reprocessing programs and indicated that this could handle the problem and remove a lot of the material, the toxic material, for a very long period of time. Now, we could say whether that's a true statement or a false statement. We can, in fact, have a nice debate about it, but the reality is that amongst the questions in that survey, that particular set of questions seemed a bit on the loaded side to me. Whereas the previous one, number 2, where only 28% were said that you could store waste safely for a long period of time, that had no such lengthy discussion one way or the other. And then people listen real carefully, and many times, as you know, people tell you what you want to hear. So These, as I say, are very, very interesting results. And if I was in favor of reprocessing, I would take very positive view of these results. Notably, by the way, newspaper coverage of this got this logic inverted. They somehow got it mixed up, and so when it appeared in the newspapers, it tended to come out that the public was not in favor of reprocessing, and that was unfortunate or fortunate, depending upon your view. But this point number two and three are just, to me, indications of how when you're doing surveys, you have to be really careful how you ask the questions. You have to be real careful where you put the questions in the survey. There are all sorts of science involved in doing this, and these results are interesting but troubling, and I worry about them. And finally, my main point on the national surveys, minimal understanding of the results. You can't tell how plastic these results are, and by plastic I mean how much they change over time, because you can't really get a feel for the time series. The Visconti surveys are the only ones that go back any length of time, and they do have some questions that have lasted for a long period of time, and there you do see the positive trend, although, as I said, it's much more positive than some of the others. But what predicts these, of course, we don't know. And this is because the questions are not formulated in a way to test scientific hypotheses, such as some of the ones I stated. Whether you agree with the ones I stated or not, the point is that when we do it, we try to have some questions in mind. There are other questions asked about global warming, and so they will do a correlation between public support of nuclear power and global warming and find a positive result. Now, is that a direct relationship, or is that an indirect relationship that's really explained by something else? So the national surveys in the United States are embarrassing. At best, I would say they're very troubling. So let's talk now about some of the more local surveys. I'll call them the backyard level data. And you'd probably be surprised, and I was, that there have been a number of studies that I think are better, and mostly because they start out with some hypotheses, some specific research questions. And the classic one for this audience is the studies done in the late 80s and 90s on Nevada. This was done by Howard Kunruther, and Paul Slovak and others were involved in this. And the question there was, how did people in Nevada actually feel about the repository? And of course, we've been hearing about this on and off for the last day and a half. But the thing I liked about this survey was they had a trade-off in mind. They wondered whether people would be willing to take dollars in the form of tax cuts to accept the repository. And so a set of questions, not one question, but a series of questions were asked about that. And the result was that the people in Nevada, large majority, wouldn't take tax cuts of $5,000 a year for 20 years to take the repository. And there were a few other data points like that. But what I liked about that survey, it was done in a very thoughtful way. You may not like the results, you may disagree with what the survey didn't include, but at least you could come out with some solid findings. The second one, and I guess this is one of our surveys, because of the lack of adequate information, one of the things that I've been very interested in finding out is people who live near nuclear waste management facilities, would they be willing to host more nuclear power plants, more nuclear waste management facilities, some of the new facilities that need to be built if we did have a GNEP. And so we went out and we looked at samples of 50 miles within Hanford, Idaho site, Oak Ridge, Savannah River, Rocky Flats, Fernald. The last two obviously are sites that are closing, but we actually picked those as controls because they should be different than the first four. And here's the findings. This is just done on a scale of 1 to 9, but if you break the scale in half, 60% were opposed to any new facilities, but that meant that 40% were not opposed. That's not 95% were opposed to any new facilities. That's not what you would expect if this was a NIMBY response. And in fact, Idaho, Savannah River, and Oak Ridge, there was considerable interest. At the Idaho site, the majority of people were actually seriously willing to consider the expression getting to maybe. They were willing to consider it, to talk about it. They were interested in the idea of hosting new nuclear-related facilities. And because we actually had asked some of the questions about why, instead of just demographics, here's the characteristics of the individuals who were favorable to at least considering the idea. They tended to be male. They tended to be well-educated, higher income. They were familiar with the site. And then they trusted the DOE science, and they trusted the DOE communication. So in the literature, trust breaks down into more than just one dimension. If you analyze people's response to trust, it's often competence is one dimension, and the second is values. And then sometimes it's three or four dimensions. But in this case, the public that was against new facilities trusted DOE science a lot more than they did DOE's communications, which is, I think, very, very interesting. It doesn't necessarily mean that the DOE is, they feel the DOE is lying to them. It's a matter of maybe it's the timing of the issue. Maybe it's who's saying it, how they're saying it. There are a variety of different things to look at. But that was a very interesting point. So that was a study set up as a scientific analysis asking the question about these six sites. And then Bisconte just came out with a study that I haven't seen them do before. Because there's a feeling that you may now get some new nuclear power plants or expansions at nuclear power plants, they went and asked people at all of the sites, 64 sites, what their impressions were of the existing facilities. An 86% favorable impression, 71% believe nuclear waste can be stored safely on site. Now, that's a powerful statement. It would be nice if the data were made available, and of course it would be a whole lot better if we had more than 18 respondents at each site. But, I mean, that's the first time that's been done, so I'm not going to be critical of that. I think that's an important first step, but it's got to be followed up. And I don't know whether the questions that they asked, did they ask the kinds of questions we asked about trust, income, education? We don't have that. All we have is a very brief report. So that's another issue. So onto my conclusions, and then I'll spend more time probably talking about the recommendations than anything else. Again, there's not much to compare among these surveys, despite the fact that so many have been asked. It's a little bit like apples and oranges and watermelons. But what we can say is that the majority are not willing to have new nuclear-related facilities near them, but you can't say much more than that. And is it 70% or is it 51%? You can't really say without better surveys, more detailed questions, and a lot more work than we have now. There seems to be more willingness among those who already live near nuclear sites because we have three different sets of results that suggest that. And then here's the part. Our ability to explain these findings is entirely inadequate and embarrassing, given the importance of this information. And this really is a problem for those who would like to be able to say something constructive to the industry, to the NRC, and to the DOE. So, on to the next. Recommendations. And I will definitely not pull any punches here. In my opinion, this is a sufficient, important public policy issue, and the amount of money to do this right is so trivial compared to the things that we have been talking about for the last day and a half, that it should clearly be the federal government's responsibility to develop, implement, and sustain national and local surveys. It should not be the focus of newspapers, whether it's one of the well-organized and good polling services. It should not, definitely not be the utilities. Even if they're doing it accurately, the tendency is not to trust them because they have a credibility problem. And if they're not willing to release the data, then how can you test whether the information is adequate or not? Nor should it be not-for-profits. People tend to perceive them as having an agenda, whether they do or not. So to me, if we really want to have data that we're going to get on an annual basis, or more often if we want to have local surveys that we're going to be able to trust, we have to treat this the way we treat any other problem in science. It needs to be organized, maybe by a committee of the National Academy, maybe by some other organization, maybe by a special NRC or DOE committee, but you need to get people who are expert in the subject of polling, and there are quite a few of them around, and you need to pull together a panel of people who really can be trusted and who will stake their recommendations on these surveys. This can't be done by people who are perceived or do, in fact, have vested interests. Now, the survey that we did at CRESP, I wrote the initial set of questions. There must have been at least a dozen people that looked at those questions. And the reality is, there were so many interesting questions, ultimately I had to make a decision to leave out certain questions. But people deliberately try to poke holes in the initial set of questions I asked. That's what needs to be done here, and it is not being done. That's the key point. This would never be allowed in engineering science. There'd be 10 people second-guessing each other, constantly criticizing each other. But that's the rule here. It is not being done adequately. The surveys need to include specific kind of nuclear-related activities. We just can't ask about new nuclear-related activities. You need to distinguish between whether we're talking about scientific instruments such as the new types of reactors, whether we're talking about power plants, waste, and weapons facilities. Have to be specific. The surveys need to include demographics. Yes, fine, we need to have demographics. We always have to have demographics in there. But we need to have questions about trust. Those have to be, at a minimum, they have to be trust questions that relate to competence and to values. And it cannot be just the federal government you ask about. You have to ask about the federal government, the state government, the local government, corporations. Some of the more interesting work I've done on this, not related to nuclear, because I didn't ask all these questions with nuclear, is you had to peel this onion pretty far down, asking about a lot of levels of authority, asking about competence and values, each time to get out what people's real views were. You have to ask about familiarity. Clearly, there's a relationship between familiarity and trust. Those who are more familiar with the site tend to be much more trusting. You have to, I believe, ask about efficacy, whether people have a sense of optimism or pessimism about it. Does influence how they react to things that are going to require us to make investments that are going to last, and we have to be able to trust for hundreds of thousands of years. We have to ask about their personal sense of mastery. In studies I've done of brownfield sites, I find a strong association between person's sense of efficacy, their mastery, their feeling that they can accomplish things, and their willingness to move forward with brownfields redevelopment, trust government, and so on. These are clearly important questions here. You have to ask about, and this came up yesterday, the issue of do they benefit personally or do they feel that they will benefit personally from these facilities being constructed? And then people have very different learning processes. And in the literature, you read a lot of it in risk analysis, there's a very interesting series of articles that say that people who are, on the one hand, more methodical versus more emotional in their reaction to information, learn differently. Some screen out a lot of information initially and respond more on an emotional basis than other. You want to ask some questions about that, too. And then finally, a point that was made before, I think Bob made this point. In the CRESP surveys we did, it was very instructive to find out how concerned people were about the nuclear waste facilities. But in some of these areas, in Idaho, in Savannah River, the people were more concerned about sprawl than they were about cleaning up the nuclear waste at the site. And to be able to ask that question, I think, is very important, because we have to put these risks, these hazards, in context. It may not affect how we regulate them and control them, but we want to get a sense of how important this issue is compared to other issues. And so, having been at the Idaho site a few times, my sense of it is that it's very open. People are used to having as much space as they want to do pretty much whatever they want. A lot of these people are very concerned about urbanization, which is threatening the places where they've been hunting and fishing for a long period of time. Their idea of a traffic jam is very different from my idea of a traffic jam in central New Jersey, but the reality is that they see their environment as changing, and they're more concerned about that than they are about the cleanup at the site. And I think that's interesting to know. Again, it may not affect your regulation, but we want to know that. Okay. And then finally, I have just been talking about polling, public opinion polling, but you can only get information at a relatively superficial level through polls. You need to probe deeply at the key sites with face-to-face interviews of local officials, environmental groups, and other key stakeholders. And normally what we would want to do, if we're going to do this correctly, is you actually start out your first analysis by having interviews with key people who represent the community. Then you do your quantitative surveys. And then when you get those results, you go back to the leadership, the representatives of the community, and you say, well, here's the results I found. Does this make sense to you? Can you elaborate? So you want to go through a multi-stage process. And I guess what I'm trying to say here, and as clearly as I can, is that this is not being done. It has not been done in any national surveys. Come close a few cases in some of the local surveys, but it's entirely inadequate, not up to the task of allowing us to say what the public really feels, perceives about nuclear power, nuclear waste management, and some of these new technologies that we've been talking about. So we'll go on to the last. And I think this leads directly into what Roger's going to talk about. I kind of guessed that he would probably jump on this, but federal government has to work harder to build public involvement. It just cannot be left to the utilities and other interest groups. I don't think the public expects that the interest groups and the federal and the utilities are going to adequately represent their views. And this came up, of course, yesterday a number of times. We have to develop the capacity to listen and talk with local governments, especially with local governments and populations. Other organizations have been at least partly successful, and I would, for example, use an example of the Corps of Engineers in working at some of the chemical weapons sites where I was on that committee for a while with Dave, and we helped them develop a process whereby they, in fact, did set up serious relationships with some of the local communities. They hired on-site people. Those on-site people had the task of making sure that the community was involved, the community had access to them, the community could ask questions. Interestingly enough, they also did a very large number of surveys, which I think helped them understand what was really going on. It actually was reassuring for them. I think the results for the Corps of Engineers were a lot more reassuring than they thought it would be. And then finally, the last point, institution building. All of this is not going to work unless we can find negotiable, acceptable institutional processes. Because if you don't try, you're going to have very little chance of succeeding at any of these sites, whether it's a former nuclear weapons facility, a current nuclear weapons facility, one of the facilities where we currently have nuclear power plants, or another area where we think new facilities might be acceptable. You have to work on the institutional building, and that means that someone from the organizations have to be willing to take the heat, have to be able to go to the communities, have mayors upset with them, have local officials upset with them, you know, and just basically face the music, because without that, without trying to build community involvement, I don't think you're going to have much of a chance at succeeding. So, thank you.
Do you want to be mobile or use the podium? If you want to be mobile, we can use both.
Yeah, I'm sort of like Mike. I like to walk around.
Can you carry him? Or?
Can I put him in the two pockets?
Yeah, you need two pockets.
And the American Academy.